I hope you can all hear me. I was offered this contraption that doesn't really work well for old orders. Not because of an aversion to technology, but maybe an aversion to scissors, I suppose. Now, my presentation today might be a little different than the others. I'd say two of the others took a more, teacherly or pedagogical, is that the way you say that, approach? Maybe one took a more teacherly and preacherly approach. Mine will be more in the line of maybe an academic paper, but I hope not too much. Academic papers might fall into the category of scholarly. Now, I've heard a lot of academic papers at conferences presented, and it seems the main qualification of a scholarly paper is that it be presented in a way that the average person can't understand. And I don't want to do that. Now, I have to confess here that there was a bit of misunderstanding. I sent a copy of a draft of my paper, and that got printed in the booklet, but I didn't really intend it to be published. It was kind of in rough form, so I'm not going to be following that altogether. Probably mostly I'll be following it. So I don't really expect you, or maybe even suggest that you follow along in that in the paper. It doesn't even have a title on it. But anyway, my topic is called The Contemporary Mennonite Church in America, An Appraisal. Now, I've interpreted this to mean a survey of the wider Mennonite world in the U.S. and Canada. Now, since I will be focusing on the conservative Mennonites tomorrow, I'll concentrate on what might be called the more modern Mennonites today. As far as making an appraisal, that is to evaluate the worth of the groups, I will be talking about that. That's something I usually try to avoid. My approach is generally to present the facts, admittedly as I see them, and then let the listeners make their own conclusions. In my book, An Introduction to Old Order and Conservative Mennonites, I basically let the different groups do their own talking and present their statements and how they feel about things without really saying how I feel. Now, I consciously avoid terms like apostate or worldly. On the other hand, traditionalist or legalist. Although these terms are rather relative and can be used on occasion. Equally ambiguous are terms like liberal and conservative, although I think these are less judgmental, and I will probably use them. Now, I'll first speak on the new body of Mennonites called Mennonite Church USA and the related Mennonite Church Canada. These church bodies are the result of a very recent merger of the two largest Mennonite groups in North America. In the text, this next sentence it isn't the way I want it to be. But anyway, members of the Mennonite Church are often referred to as MCs, and members of the General Conference Mennonite Church are called GCs. Now, many of you in the audience are probably familiar with those two groups. Many other people, especially younger people who grew up entirely in a conservative Mennonite setting, might not be familiar. Now, for example, in Holmes County, Ohio, There's the First Mennonite Church, well, it's not really in Holmes County, just across the border. The First Mennonite Church of Sugar Creek, that is a GC church. The Walnut Creek Mennonite Church is an MC church. I mean, they came from those groups before the merger. Now, I'm not sure those of you from that area would see an obvious difference between those two churches. Probably 50 years ago, you would have seen some difference. 75 years ago, you would have seen a great deal of difference. Actually, I believe if my history is right, the Sugar Creek First Church, Mennonite Church, divided from Walnut Creek back in the 1920s. Briefly stated, the Mennonite Church has been called the Old Mennonite Church, not Old Order, because it was considered to be the direct spiritual descendant of the Swiss Anabaptists, whom we've heard about today, originating in 1525. Now, these Mennonites found refuge, as we heard, in the German Palatinate, and from there began relocating in Pennsylvania around 1700. The first Mennonites, as Brother Russell pointed out, had more Dutch connections, but there was a flood of people coming over from the Palatinate in the 1700s and settling in southeastern Pennsylvania. And from there, these old Mennonites spread to Virginia, Maryland, onto Ontario, and before 1800, and then onto Ohio, Indiana, and further west during the 19th century. Now, eventually, regional conferences were formed, such as Franconia, which would be in southeastern Pennsylvania, and Lancaster, of course, based in Lancaster County, the Virginia Conference, the Ohio Conference, etc. These conferences were independent of each other, but had a kind of a loose fraternal relationship, the same as Old Order Mennonites do today, and even, I would say, conservative Mennonite groups. But then in 1898, a number of these regional conferences were united into a larger association called the Mennonite General Conference. Now, we heard a little bit about that in Brother Edsel's presentation. And this body is not to be confused with the General Conference Mennonite Church. There's the Mennonite General Conference and the General Conference Mennonite Church. Very confusing, not the same thing. The General Conference Mennonite Church had its beginning in 1860 when a few Mennonite churches in the Midwest, Illinois, Iowa, basically, who had recently immigrated from Europe, joined together with the East Pennsylvania Mennonite Conference to form the General Conference Mennonite Church. Now, this latter was the East Pennsylvania Mennonite Church was an 1847 splinter group from the Franconia Mennonite Conference in Pennsylvania under the leadership of John Oberholzer, who wished to introduce many new innovations among the Mennonites. And he saw plain clothing and other traditional practices as unnecessary. One of the main issues was introducing a written church constitution. Now, don't confuse the East Pennsylvania Mennonite Church. East Pennsylvania Mennonite Conference was the Eastern Pennsylvania Mennonite Church of today. The two have no connection, and they're extreme opposite ends of the spectrum. The General Conference Mennonites, though, from that beginning in 1860, got a real boost when thousands of immigrants from Russia settled in the Midwest in Kansas and Manitoba especially. During the first half of the 20th century, the General Conference Mennonites were regarded as liberal or worldly by the old Mennonites, the MCs, while the GCs considered the MCs as bound by tradition and legalism. But during the last half of the 20th century, the MCs grew increasingly closer to the GCs as traditional standards of nonconformity to the world were rapidly cast aside. And by the 1970s, there were few obvious differences between most MCs and GCs. And members of both groups began wondering why they couldn't work together. I remember an article in the Gospel Herald in the late 1960s, I believe it was, entitled something like, "John Oberholzer, We Are Sorry," for expelling him back in 1847. So the real reasons, many of the reasons for that division were no longer valid, or no longer made a difference to the people. Then in 1983, an unprecedented event occurred at Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. The first joint meeting of the General Assembly of the Mennonite Church, which is the name that the Mennonite General Conference adopted in 1971, after a kind of a reorganization, probably to avoid confusion with the General Conference Mennonites. Anyway, this joint meeting of the MCs and the GCs occurred. The express purpose of this meeting was to provide an occasion for the two groups to become better acquainted through joint worship and fellowship, although the delegates from each group had their separate business meetings. Now, over the years, a number of individual congregations became duly affiliated with the Mennonite Church and the General Conference Mennonite Church. And this made for problems later on. A major step in the actual merger of the two groups happened in Canada in 1988, when the two Mennonite Church conferences, that would be the Ontario Mennonite Conference and the Western Ontario Mennonite Conference. The Western Ontario Mennonite Conference was of Amish background. It would have had a similar background to the Conservative Mennonite Conference. And then the General Conference Mennonite group was the Conference of United Mennonite Churches, which was composed of people who had an old Mennonite background and then Russian Mennonites who moved to Ontario. They formed the General Conference Mennonite, or the Mennonite Conference of Eastern Canada, which belonged to both groups. Now, a second joint meeting of the GCs and MCs occurred in Normal, Illinois in 1989, where a recommendation on exploring MC-GC integration was adopted. The two conferences voted in favor of a formal merger in 1995 at the third joint session of the MC and GCs in Wichita, Kansas. Here, a commitment to move toward integration was a major agenda item, as well as the adoption of a new confession of faith in a Mennonite perspective. A statement agreeing and disagreeing in love was made for use in decision making and in managing conflicts, of which there would be many in the next several years. Several regional conferences of the MCs and GCs merged in the late 90s and had a dual membership in both Mennonite bodies. Then in 1999, at joint sessions of the Mennonite Church and the General Conference Mennonite Church and the Conference of Mennonites in Canada, the formation of two national conferences from the three bodies was approved. So those three combined to make two, the Mennonite Church USA and the Mennonite Church Canada. The legal merger of the Mennonite Church and General Conference Mennonite Church became effective, as far as I know, this, at least this was the plan, on February 1st, 2003, just in this year. So, did the GCs and MCs marry and live happily ever after? Hardly. Even the engagement period was very stormy. Outwardly, the two groups appear very similar. All matters of outward separation from the world are largely absent. But there are a number of group personality characteristics that have made the union stressful. To begin with, the regional conferences in the Mennonite Church had a considerable amount of authority. While congregational government was emphasized in the General Conference Mennonite Church, the MC churches were more prone to exercise discipline over their members, and the regional conferences exercised discipline over the churches. General Conference churches, in the spirit of tolerance and inclusiveness, were often slow to discipline members, and regional conferences were reluctant to discipline churches. This major difference was revealed in the major issue of homosexuality. Before the merger, several Mennonite churches began accepting practicing homosexual members. Many of these congregations had joint membership in both the Mennonite Church and the General Conference Mennonite Church. And I think one of these was the, well, I know one of them was the Germantown Mennonite Church, which belonged to both the Franconia Mennonite Conference and the Eastern District Conference of the General Conference. Is that right? The Mennonite Church expelled six of these churches, while the General Conference took no action. After the merger, there was much debate on whether the churches permitting homosexual members would be part of the new denomination. The new Confession of Faith, adopted in 1995, makes it very clear that homosexual activity is sin. However, a vocal minority has pressed for continued dialogue on the issue. This issue has been largely responsible for the withdrawal of many churches from the merger proceedings, mostly by those churches who feel that tolerating homosexual members is a serious violation of a biblical mandate. Although there are some churches that have left the new group because it is not tolerant enough of homosexuals. The constituent regional conferences of the Mennonite Church General Assembly and the General Conference Mennonite Church were given the opportunity, I should say the MCs and the GCs to make it clear, were given the opportunity to become part of the Mennonite Church USA and the Mennonite Church Canada if they affirm their commitment to the new group by February 1st, 2002. Most of the conferences did so, but a few wishing to have more time to think over the decision were given provisional membership in the denomination for 5 years. Now, as far as I know, out of the 28 conferences that became part of the Mennonite Church USA and Mennonite Church Canada, six conferences asked for this status. Those are Lancaster, Franklin, Edsel's area, New York, North Central, Northwest, and South Central. The Northwest Conference in Canada totally withdrew from the Mennonite Church Canada in 2002. The Lancaster Conferences had an especially difficult time determining its status in the MC USA. Over 20 churches have completely withdrawn from the conference in the last few years for somewhat different reasons and went in various directions. Some of these congregations are conservatively Mennonite in their emphasis. Others might be characterized as charismatic. I worked with a number of charismatic Mennonites. One person I talked to referred to them as Menacostals. At the fall 2002 session of the Lancaster Conference, seven churches were released to the Koinonia Fellowship of Churches, which, according to a person that I talked to in one of these churches, is totally non-Mennonite now, and it is of charismatic emphasis. At the same session, five congregations in New England transferred to the Harvest Fellowship of Churches, which would probably be considered an evangelical group, not necessarily charismatic as far as I know. On the other hand, 32 churches expressed a desire to remain part of the Lancaster Conference, but not be part of the MCUSA. These churches, with a membership totaling 4,174, make up 22.5% of the 18,529 members of the Lancaster Conference. You'll find out that I enjoy statistics. Steve Nolte, who wrote History of the Amish, referred to himself and myself as statistic junkies. But I hope I don't get too carried away. Thirteen of these churches, with a total membership of 1,480, are traditionally conservative Mennonites who practice the head covering and some degree of nonconformity. Most churches in this category are of the Martindale and Juniata districts. The remaining 19 churches might be described as conservative evangelicals who put little, if any, emphasis on traditional Mennonite symbols, but stand firmly in what they would consider fundamentals of the faith. Included in this group are the Weaverland Church, which is the largest congregation in the whole conference, and the Lancaster Conference sessions are held there normally. And then there's the Strasburg Mennonite Church, which when I was working at Lancaster Mennonite High School back in the 60s for my 1W service, it would have been considered a very progressive church when dress standards were still an issue. But these churches would be more conservative in their view of the Bible and its authority. Another church in this class would be the Paradise Mennonite Church, but they were among the first to totally withdraw from the Lancaster Conference, and they became part of a new group called the Alliance of Mennonite Evangelical Congregations, which officially organized in the year 2000. This fellowship presents an interesting combination of churches with very different backgrounds. As far as I can tell, 9 of the 15 churches that belong to this group had been part of the Eastern District Conference of the General Conference Mennonite Church. Other congregations had been part of Lancaster, Franconia, and the Atlantic Coast Conference of the Mennonite Church. Now, it's very ironic that groups from both the MCs and GCs who opposed the merger withdrew from those groups and then merged with each other. It's one of those ironies of church history. But they were all very biblicist in their emphasis, but not necessarily traditional in their application of conservative Mennonite standards. The Eastern District Conference descends from that John Oberholzer group in 1847. And they had a different background from most other parts of the General Conference Mennonite Church, and they developed a rather unique character compared with the majority of churches in Western U.S. and Canada. And as I said, a large part of the Eastern District Conference identified fully with the tenets of American evangelicalism. Then the merger painfully divided the group in the year 2000. There still is an Eastern District Conference, but it's, of course, much smaller. Other regional conferences losing churches due to the merger include Allegheny, which is in more western Pennsylvania, with three churches leaving. Atlantic Coast, which is mostly in the eastern part of Pennsylvania, they actually descend from one of the Amish Mennonite conferences that Edsel talked about that gradually withdrew from the old order. They lost five churches. One church left the Central District, three from Franklin Conference, three from Indiana, Michigan, five from Virginia, and five from South Central. Now, this last named conference had expelled the Rainbow Mennonite Church in Kansas City for its position on homosexuality. But the Western District Conference, with which the church also was affiliated, wishes to establish a separate category for this church called Congregations at Variance. On the other hand, two churches were reinstated into the Illinois Conference in 2002 that had been placed under discipline in 1997 for being out of order concerning their acceptance of homosexual members. Two of the largest contingents to leave the Mennonite Church over the merger are very non-traditional churches with what might be considered fundamentalist theology. These are the 13 congregations and over 1,000 members of the Hopewell Network of Churches, which had been part of the Atlantic Coast Conference, mostly in Pennsylvania, with one church in New Jersey. And the seven churches and approximately 1,500 members of the Cornerstone Church and Ministries in Virginia, with churches also in Florida, Missouri, and South Carolina. These two groups, along with the Radical Restoration Ministries based in Indiana, have become associated with the new Association of Radical Church Networks. Their separation from the Mennonite Church was over a perceived departure from biblical orthodoxy. These churches are very strongly charismatic, emphasizing contemporary worship and what they call apostolic leadership, which I don't fully understand. Brother Edsel and I had a bit of a conversation about that. A very authoritarian leadership, really. The Hopewell Statement of Faith gives some recognition to the way of peace, but does not mention feet washing at all. So I don't even know if the Hopewell group even considers themselves Mennonites, and for that matter, the Cornerstone group. If they do presently, my guess would be they won't for very long. Now, these aggressive, enthusiastic, I guess you'd say dynamic churches are doing great things in the name of God. It appears that they identify primarily with mainstream Pentecostal or charismatic groups. The Anabaptist concerns of non-resistance and non-conformity to the world are secondary, if acknowledged at all. So the dust really hasn't settled in the controversies concerning the merger. The conferences with provisional membership in the new group have until 2007 to make up their minds about joining. It's really difficult to predict what will happen, especially in the Lancaster Conference. So far, we've focused on the merger of the Mennonite Church and the General Conference Mennonite Church and the resulting departures from the combined group. There are also several other groups of mainstream that should be mentioned. And in the booklet, you'll see a table with a list of those groups and the membership statistics for U.S. and Canada. Not in your booklet, and I kind of overlook this group because I don't know where to put them. And that would be, they are on the table, but not in my original presentation. And that's the Conservative Mennonite Conference. Are they a mainstream modern group or are they a conservative Mennonite group? Well, they would appear more mainstream, but they would be more conservative in theology. They have broken most ties with the MCs a few years ago have kind of distanced themselves after being very close to the Mennonite Church for a very long time, but now they're pulling back. I'm sure many of you are quite well acquainted with the Conservative Mennonite Conference, and they are kind of a different entity, and I think they're struggling for an identity, really. Then the largest of these modern Mennonite groups is the Mennonite Brethren Church. This group resulted from a, I guess you would call it a pietistic revival among Russian Mennonites centered in 1860. The Mennonite Brethren have been strongly influenced by Baptists and practice the Baptist form of immersion. These people have a strongly evangelical emphasis, but have also tried to maintain some Anabaptist distinctives. They have shown little, if any, interest in joining the Mennonite Church USA or Mennonite Church Canada. The Mennonite Brethren also have separate U.S. and Canadian conferences. Now, they're very scarce in the East. They're more centered in the Western United States, Kansas and California, and then through Western Canada, and well, in Ontario somewhat too. So probably we don't have much contact with these Mennonite Brethren. There are 20,663 members in the U.S. and 33,200 members in Canada. The Evangelical Mennonite Church, in some respects, is very similar to the Mennonite Brethren, but it's much smaller, 4,646 members, and has a very different background. This group originated in 1865 under the leadership of Henry Egley, who I believe Edsel mentioned. He was an Amish minister from Bern, Indiana. And it's not clear, and I've looked at various sources, whether Egley was part of the Amish Mennonite group or the Old Order Amish, and that it was just forming. Those two groups were just forming or separating or drawing apart at that time, so it's a little clear where his congregation ended up before after the division. At first, his group was called Egley Amish, and they did place some emphasis on outward separation from the world. But as the 20th century progressed, and especially after Egley died, the Anabaptist distinctives were gradually lost, and the group became primarily mainstream evangelical in emphasis. At the 2000 annual conference, the delegates voted on whether or not to change their official name to Conference of Evangelical Churches, dropping the name Mennonite. 72% voted to change, but 75% was required to pass that resolution. Many of the members of the Evangelical Mennonite Church feel that the name Mennonite associates them with the Amish in many people's minds, and this is considered a barrier to evangelizing. Of the 32 churches in the group, 20 do not use the name Mennonite in their congregational name. It is probably only a matter of a few years until the denominational name is changed. Actually, the present name was only adopted in 1949. For 40 years prior to that time, their title was Conference of the Defenseless Mennonite Church in North America. Perhaps the term defenseless was seen as inappropriate. Now here in the handout, I don't have the statistics. That was one of my major goofs there. I was going to look that up. Now I have the statistics. Only 17 out of 166 men drafted in World War II served as conscientious objectors. Another 58 were non-combatants in the Army, while 91 were full Army combatants. So the defenselessness had sort of vanished there. And I have some other statistics that might be of interest. This report was originally published in the Mennonite General Conference Report of 1949. To give you an idea of the difference in the stand that young men took during World War II, those who were drafted, the Mennonite Church, the old Mennonite Church, had 60% who were full COs. There were 11% that were non-combatants. And when I mean non-combatants, that is those who served in the military but did not take up arms. And 29% were combatants. And the General Conference Mennonite Church, the GCs, 26% were full COs, 16% were non-combatants, and 58% were full combatants. The Old Order Amish, 93% were full COs, 4% non-combatants, and 3% combatants. And I would say that 7% probably, I'm sure, did not remain members of the church. And the Church of God in Christ, the Holderman Mennonites, have a similar record. 93% were full COs. The Mennonite Brethren, whom I just mentioned, had 36% COs, 32% non-combatants, and 32% combatants. The group with the lowest percentage of COs was a group that has since changed its name, and that is the Mennonite Brethren in Christ. This is a group with a very complex background. They came from different sources, a bunch of little groups formed together with a very small group of Brethren in Christ and formed the Mennonite Brethren in Christ. Later, they took the name United Missionary Church, and then they merged with a group that was a breakoff of the Egley group or Evangelical Mennonites, and they became just the Missionary Church after that. And that group had a split in Eastern Pennsylvania. It's the Bible Fellowship Churches. But they went fully into the evangelical world, and like I'm afraid a lot of the other groups who are going in that direction, there will be little, if anything, left of their non-resistant faith. The Mennonite Brethren in Christ had only 5% who served as COs, 17% as non-combatants, and 79% as full combatants. Well, maybe that's enough statistics for now. I said I wouldn't get carried away with the statistics. And I'm also running out of time. I'll go on for a little bit here. Another small Mennonite group did recently drop the Mennonite name from their official title. This group, the Evangelical Mennonite Brethren, was begun in 1889 by Russian Mennonites seeking spiritual renewal. In 1987, they became known as the Fellowship of Evangelical Bible Churches. They, like the Evangelical Mennonite Church, they thought the name Mennonite discouraged evangelism and church growth. When the name change was made, there were 4,538 members. In 1991, there were 4,035 members. At last count, there were 3,835 members. Well, I have it written here. This is one of the things that I should have changed because it might not be appropriate, but I said obviously the identity didn't have the desired effect, and maybe they should try breath mints or a new brand of deodorant to attract more members or something, because changing the name didn't seem to work. Sorry about that if that's inappropriate. Anyway, there are a couple of other Mennonite groups in Canada with Russian roots that fall into the category we've been looking at. The older of the two is the Evangelical Mennonite Conference with about 6,500 members with headquarters at Steinbach, Manitoba. They descend from the very conservative Kleine Gemeinde, meaning small church, Mennonites, which organized in Russia in 1814. Now, there was a division in the 1940s with the most conservative members moving to Mexico and later Belize and other countries. Unlike the Evangelical Mennonite Church, the Evangelical Mennonite Conference has retained a degree of Mennonite emphasis and identity. While there is very little in the way of outward separation from the world, the Confession of Faith contains a strong statement on peace, and foot washing is described as an ordinance of the church. The Evangelical Mennonite Mission Conference is yet another relatively small Russian Mennonite group. This was a 1937 splinter group from the Sommerfeld Mennonites in Manitoba, who at that time were very traditional in their forms of worship. The new group wished to introduce a more evangelical church program. The emphasis on non-resistance in the EMMC was very strong during World War II, but has diminished since that time due to the influence of non-Mennonite evangelicals. Okay, I was told that I have a little bit more time since we started later. I'm not sure how much more that will be, but I only have a little bit more here. The Sommerfeld Mennonites in Manitoba, although usually classed as a conservative Mennonite group, they have increasingly modernized since the 1950s and now have very little in common with conservative Mennonites of Swiss origin, like the people here. This is also true of other groups originating from the Bergtal Mennonite colony in Russia, who settled in Manitoba in the 1870s. And I'm never sure, I was going to call somebody from this group to find out how exactly you pronounce this. Kortitzer Mennonite Conference of Manitoba in the Steinbach area, and the Bergtaler Mennonite Church of Saskatchewan. All of these churches have recently adopted English language church services. Now, a lot of them have a service in German and one in English. They've accepted musical instruments pretty much. They've adopted Sunday schools, and many women do not wear the head covering any longer. But on the traditional side, the ministers are mostly elected from the congregations and are unsalaried. The ministers are selected for the whole group and they rotate among the churches. Many of the ministers still wear the traditional frock coats and black shirts. Now, there's a history of the Sommerfeld Mennonite Church, and they have pictures of the current ministers and their wives. The ministers look what we'd call very plain. Most of the wives, not at all. There have been a number of conservative offshoots from the Sommerfelder, Burgthaler, and Kortitzer, but those would best be covered at another time. Now, this concludes my survey of the modern or mainstream Mennonites in North America. Tomorrow, I'm scheduled to speak on the conservative Mennonite church in 2003, and I will take a radically different approach to this subject. There's nothing in your handout about my talk tomorrow, and I guess that'll have to be a surprise. Perhaps because people I'll be speaking about will largely be one and the same as those I am speaking to. So I'll have to watch my step a little more. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.